Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
So Wales against Ireland on Friday night is coming sharply into focus, and 15 years ago now, Ireland against Wales was notable for quite a few reasons. It was a record winning margin in Dublin. We ran in 6 tries, it was 54 points to 10. It was Paul O'Connell's debut, and it was Eddie O'Sullivan's first game in charge of Ireland. Eddie, that's a damn good first day at the office.
Yeah, it certainly was. I would have taken a 1-0 victory before the game, but that turned out a lot better than I expected.
How much pressure was on you going into that campaign? And I ask in light of, you know, I was doing some reading and a random Daily Telegraph piece after Gatland's departure, and it's in a committee-driven coup, Gatland was summoned to Dublin and informed of the decision in a terse meeting lasting just 8 minutes. The question why still hangs in the air, though. Under Gatland, in the past 2 years, Ireland have lost just 5 of their 16 internationals. There was this sense that, I presume, I don't know how aware of it you were, that maybe Gatland had been harshly treated. Were you very aware of that? Did you feel like a wanted man or an unwanted man by the Irish rugby public?
I don't know if it was the Irish rugby public, but certain precincts in the media, he had a lot of support, and it was a lot of finger-pointing about why he was let go, you know.
Mm.
It's very interesting that nobody has since, kind of, any journalists have delved into that and talked to people like Keith Wood or Brian O'Driscoll or the manager, Brian O'Brien, who were, you know, at the epicenter of it, you know. So,
yeah.
Me having taken over, he was probably an easy target, and there's an element of that in it. But, yeah, I was aware of it for sure. And, of course, if I hadn't kind of delivered on the opening day, I would have got absolutely pounded. I put this, there was certainly no honeymoon period for me, and I was well aware of that going into it, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. We've got snippets. There were recommendations that there should have been a defence coach, and that wasn't followed up upon. Training wasn't as good as maybe people might have suspected it was. And he had maybe lost the faith of a couple of senior pros around the time of 01. So all of this was going on in the background. But I guess it's not like you can come out to the media and spill the beans on all this.
No, I mean, it wasn't my decision to be offered a job. It was my decision to take it. And had I said no to it at that time, somebody else would have been offered it, that's for sure, you know.
Yeah.
I had to be a coach appointed. So I just got on with it, you know. But there was salt from the air, you know. And I'd say a bit of finger-pointing to certain precincts in the media that would have been supportive of Warren Gatland, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
But look, I could do nothing about that. I had a job to do, and I wanted to get on with it and put my stamp on the team. And that game was hugely important to get out of the blocks.
Yeah.
As best we could, you know. I mean, and the preparation time was minuscule. I mean, I was effectively appointed on the last day of November, which meant I effectively had about 8 weeks to get ready for Six Nations, you know.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty short time frame to get everything in place, including finding some staff. We didn't have a defence coach when I took over. I brought in Mike Ford. I had to find a defence coach, which took his time, and I do a few other things, you know. So there, it was a bit of a cannonball run to get to the start of the championship. In some shape or form of being more organised, or as organised as I want us to be at that time, you know.
Yeah, and how did you spend that 8 weeks? Did you go around and sit down with players? Were you talking to them a lot, or were you too preoccupied trying to get Mike Ford and others in place?
Well, that was part of it, but it was a lot of talking to players. I had a lot of meetings with Keith Wood, who was the captain, you know, talked to a lot of senior players, tell them where I was going, people like Michael Galway, Peter Clancy, you know, guys who would have been the senior players at that time. Getting them all on the same page, where we were to go and what we were doing, you know, and what they saw needed to change as well. I get feedback from them.
Yeah.
And then trying to explain my philosophy, how we wanted to play, what we wanted to achieve. There was a lot going on. There was, you know, it was just a frantic time. 8 weeks to take a job on and head into a Six Nations isn't a lot of prep time. So I certainly put my time to best use. I was pretty much flat out, you know. And then suddenly it's right in front of you, you're starting the championship. And there was a lot of pressure for sure in Dublin. And I was delighted the way it turned out. It was a very complete performance. I think I was kind of lucky too, to be honest. Like Wales were, you know, in a bad spot. They had kind of, I think they'd kind of come to the end of the road with the coach, you know. And Brian Henry was under a lot of pressure in Wales as well at that time. He'd come off the Lions tour. I think there was a lot of, I suppose, bad feeling came out of the Welsh camp on the Lions tour, and he was part of that, so he was under his own pressure. So it was two goals under pressure.
Yeah.
And ironically, you know, the day after that game, he resigned as the Welsh coach, and Steve Hansen took over.
That's right.
So it's, is an indication of what, how important that game was to him as well, you know.
Yeah, we have Mick Galway on the line. Can you remember sitting down with Eddie at some stage in those 8 weeks, Mick?
I certainly do, yeah. I certainly do. I sat down with Eddie a good few times. And, yeah, I suppose, look, there was pressure on everybody, but particularly, I suppose, that first day out, as Eddie said. Of course, we were well led from the front by Mick Galway. You know, that made a huge difference that day. But so it's very funny. I was only slagging Paul O'Connell about it recently, but that was Paul O'Connell's first cap.
Yeah.
And I suppose it was an easy transition for Paul because he came straight. I think there was 7 months of forwards on that day. You know what I mean? Mm. And I think Simon Easterby was the other one. And Peter Stringham was scrum half. So there was no real difference for Paul. So it was an armchair. Right from the point of view of the people around him that he'd worked with.
Mm.
But that's where I remember that game most for. Obviously, I was lucky enough to be captain that day, and I think we put 50-odd points in Wales. And then again, you never knew with Wales what kind of a team would turn up. But we certainly got on top of them that day. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. O'Connell scored a try that day.
Do you remember, Michael, Paul got concussed in the first half in that game? He'd no memory of the game, in fact. He scored a try, and he wouldn't believe the medics that he scored a try, and they showed him in the halftime.
Absolutely,
on TV.
Yeah.
And he got confused about the clock. The clock was running down in the stadium for some reason, and he saw something like 3 or 4 minutes left to halftime, and it took him off. But he thought the clock was running up, and he insisted he couldn't come off 3 minutes to his first cap, you know.
Something like that. He was totally confused. God love him, you know.
He was very confused, but he scored his first try. And his first, but he's no memory of it.
Absolutely.
I think, Mick, you've told a story before about the next morning he's reading the newspapers about his try in a game he can't even remember over breakfast.
Yeah, that's the way it was, you know. Like, and I suppose back then, you know, like, I know there's a lot more talk about concussion, you know, but Paul was clearly concussed on the day, you know what I mean? And like that, like Eddie said, he was looking up at the clock and he didn't know if it was the score or the time or whatever the hell was happening, you know what I mean? So it was confusing from that point of view. And I remember he was even so confused, he didn't even walk off the pitch. He did a lap of honour before he went off. So we were slagging about that, you know, just because he scored a try in his first cap. It didn't allow him to do a lap of honour. But yeah, you know, that's the way it was, you know. But in fairness, the medical team got him off, you know, and that's what was done back in the day. But there was no head assessment or anything like that. You know, like, you were either concussed or you weren't in fog, but certainly concussed that. There's no doubt about it.
As you mentioned, Keith Wood was injured, so you were the captain, Mick. What was your captaincy style? I presume you were in the referee's ear, the Argentinian ref, a lot?
I would have been. Well, I suppose, I don't know, I look at the way the game has changed, and I just felt back then that, I don't know, looking, watching it now, I felt you could have more of an influence on referees back then. Not so much an influence, but you help them along, you know, I suppose. It's a better way of putting it. You help them along and you encourage them to make the right decision. And, you know, I know there's probably more cameras on now and they're mic'd up and God knows what. So it's probably harder to have influence on a referee now. But no doubt about it, back then you had to, if you were playing at home and there was an Argentinian referee there and he wasn't the most experienced referee of all time. So you had to make sure that you brought him along with the team and encouraged him to give you the 50-50s, and that's all you want.
Mm.
And Nick, I remember he told me that night at the dinner that you were the greatest captain in world rugby after that game. I remember in the second, he penalised Peter Clancy for collapsing the scrum, and you said to him, "Ref, what's the penalty for?" And he said, Michael, he said, "Peter Clancy has just collapsed the scrum." He said, you said to him, "You're right, a good decision."
That's right.
So I think he was taking stock of everything you told him on the day.
Absolutely, I think he was, yeah. He said it's a pity he didn't listen to me, or you didn't listen to him more, because you dropped me 2 weeks later. You dropped the greatest captain in the world, huh? Jesus.
Oh, why was he dropped, Eddie?
Well, I think at that stage, Michael.
I was definitely out the gap. I'm only slagging. I had my say at that day.
I think it's well established, Mike. I dropped you as a player more than any other coach.
Probably did. You probably did, in fairness.
And the good news, you're still talking to me. So
I'm still talking to you. That's exactly it. That's exactly it, anyway.
How did Mick take the news to being dropped, Eddie?
Well, it's funny. I remember the doing it. It was in Belfast at a camp, and we
Absolutely.
Brought him into the room. Myself and Brian O'Brien, who was the manager, and Brian O'Brien would know Michael since he was a schoolboy, really. He played for Shannon.
Yeah,
he came through to Shannon, and And Brian was very upset of breaking the news. And I found it hard as well. But I think Brian was more upset than you, Mick, to be fair.
I think he was. But I'd say
Brian... You felt sorry for him, I think, at the end of the conversation.
I did. I said nothing. The way usually you'd fight your corner and God knows what. But I just said, look, that's fair enough. That's the way you have to go there. I'd say you were expecting a big showdown, but there was no showdown. Look, at that stage, I was 35 years of age. I was delighted to have got, particularly in my final few years, I was delighted to get anything I ever got. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was lucky enough to have captained Ireland on four occasions, and we won on three of those occasions. So I have a 75% record as Irish captain, which I'll take away. I that doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Eddie, you might talk to us about the tactics that day, because I think you and Mick even would have talked beforehand and you would have eschewed the tactics you'd used in preceding games, you know, fanning out across the pitch and maybe not committing numbers to the ruck. You went after Wales at the breakdown that day, is that right?
We did, yeah. We talked about it before the game that probably the overarching thing about Wales back then is they weren't as physical as the Welsh team of the noughties, like late noughties, like under Warren Gatland. There wasn't Warren ball. They were actually quite shy in contact. They were very skillful as well, though, and if they got on the front foot, they could really hurt you. So we decided we'd be very physical with them, and particularly in the first 20 minutes that when it came to ruck time, we'd be very aggressive at the ruck with numbers, and if necessary, we would use our feet to clear the ball and send out a message to them, and They didn't really like it, particularly away from home. They were vulnerable like that. They'd kind of back away. Now, that's not the Welsh team we regard nowadays, but at that time, they were vulnerable to that. That they kind of shied away from that aggressive contact. So that was part of the agenda. And the other thing they had is they had just made a big deal about picking Yeston Harris, bring him across from league and give him a big contract and put him straight into the team for his first cap against us. So we picked him out in the midfield and we really went after him. I remember the first try of the game, we dropped Wally off a mall and gave Wally the ball and he ran straight over Yeston Harris under the sticks.
Yeah.
Kind of said, welcome to Lansdowne Road, you know. And he was all over the place. So they were the kind of things we talked about, being very aggressive with them, very, very hard at ruck time and picking on Harris in the middle of the field and really making his day a misery, you know. And it worked out very well. As the game went on, you could see they were losing interest. They were kind of heading for the bus, I think, halfway through the second half, you know.
Yeah. That Wallace try must settle you down personally, watching the game in a huge way. Can you remember the nerves that morning or the pre-match speech you would have given to the lads? Were you feeling very self-conscious and very aware of the fact that this was new territory, or was it surprisingly okay?
Oh, yeah, I was very nervous. Like, you're never not nervous before an international, you know. The worst part of preparing for international as a coach is the hours before the game, because you can really do nothing in terms of preparation. It's all done and you just kind of feel you're almost in the way. You need to back off the players and let them get on with their own preparation. And before the game, just kind of reiterate what's important. Not say too much, because you're almost feeding your own anxiety if you talk too much, you know.
Yeah.
So remind yourself of all that. But yeah, I was very nervous before the game. Probably as nervous as I've ever been, because I think next time I was more nervous was before England against England in Croke Park. But your first international is always special, because you want to get off on the right foot, you know.
Yeah, Mick.
For sure.
Mick, can you remember if Eddie struck you as nervous in the build-up to it?
Look, to be honest, we were all nervous. But yeah, look, it was obviously new territory for Eddie. But sometimes, you know, sometimes when a new coach comes in, it can often be good, but it's just a different angle. Like I know, but what Eddie said there was right. We had laid down our marker, because we were going to be very physical. And, like, you know, if you lay down a marker to be physical with the opposition and you're not physical enough with them and it doesn't work out, well, then, you know, you're going back to the drawing board. And it's not easy to go back to the drawing board in the middle of international, particularly back then, I suppose. We did, you know, like, if you look at the modern teams now, they seem to be able to change the game plan week in, week out. Mm. And to be honest, back then, I'm not saying that, that everything was set in stone. But certainly, you know, if we hadn't won the forward battle earlier on that day, we could have been in trouble. You know what I mean? And that's how games are won and lost. But I remember the two Connell brothers we were playing, and the one thing that, you know, Scott and Craig, two big lads. That's actually how Paul O'Connell got injured. He was tackling Craig Connell very earlier on. I think he got an elbow in the head, and that's exactly how he got injured. But the one thing we did that day is we targeted both of those every time they get a ball. They'd be their big boys, they'd be the experienced boys, and then we just put them back. And that's, you know, when you do things like that, it works out, it's great. But if it doesn't, it can be tricky. But thankfully, everything worked out on the day.
Just before you came in the line, Mick, Eddie and I were talking about the smell of sulphur in the air and the fallout from the end of Gatland's tenure, and you know, it's been talked about in the press a lot. Was there any suggestion that the players, that you know, that Gatland had lost the players, or that you were part of his end? Like, were you under pressure in a way as well to justify Gatland going, or was there no sense at the time the players had anything to do with it?
No, I don't think. Well, from my point of view, and this is being very honest, yeah. I don't think the players, well, particularly from my end, or from the lads I would have known, I don't think anything to do with the players. I think that was the foot and mouth year, you know, and I look back as a player, I look at that, and what I do think about it, that was a Grand Slam we left after us. Like, I was never lucky enough to win a Grand Slam or a Triple Crown for that matter, but I certainly look back on that year because it was a foot and mouth year. We had, you know, we had beaten France, we'd beat France at home, we'd been Italy away. Okay, we were going to Scotland, and again, I was dropped for the Scottish match, but I remember Peter Stringer was left out the same day, and David Wallace, and not saying that the lads went there, but I don't think we were prepared enough going to Scotland. A bit like this year, to be honest. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can take the Scots for granted. So, you know, I'd say probably I'd be thinking the IRFU probably made up their mind probably after the Scottish match, to be honest. You know what I mean? It didn't really matter what happened after that. I know we played New Zealand as well that year, and at one stage actually we were up 14 points after half time against them. But yeah. I think, look, the damage was done. I think the IRFU had made their mind up, and it was as simple as that.
Right? Did you feel that put a stop to the Gatland stuff, that win against Wales, or did it linger on for another while after that?
I think it still lingered on, that championship. I remember we lost in Paris, which was not unusual. It's not unusual to lose in Paris.
Yeah.
That was the last game in the championship. In Paris, they won. France won the Grand Slam.
They won the Grand Slam. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and the headline was all in some of the broadsheets was about, you know, Gatland's not responsible for this. So
right.
I was, you know, so there was a bit of that going on, you know.
Yeah.
So every time we had a bad day, that whole thing came into view again from certain precincts, not everybody, but certain precincts.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's just looking back, he didn't bloody help the situation much either. Like, I didn't realise as late as 07 before that game against Ireland, he's still bringing it up then and dragging you into it. And I can imagine from your point of view, it's a terrible thing to have a label to stick on someone.
Well, you can't defend it, you know. It's like that I was responsible for him being let go. You know, how do you defend that? I mean, all I did, as I said, was I was offered the job and I accepted it. If I'd said no, somebody else would have been offered it.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I did. So, but it wasn't spun that way in certain precincts, you know, it was a pity.
Mm.
But that's the way it was, and there's not much you can do about it, you know.
And around that period, around 07 or 08, did you ever confront him or say anything to him about it?
No. Nothing really, you know.
Yeah.
No. We did have a chat after the game in the Croke Park where we lost that game. It was 08, and I did challenge him about that and said, look, you know, I had nothing to do with it, and you know, he obviously felt I had, but he kind of backed away from it then, you know. I mean, he was his own theories on it, but we never got past that. I just wanted to have a beer and get past it.
Yeah, I guess it's gone on long enough at that stage. Mick, you retired the following year.
I retired that year, to be honest. I retired from international rugby. But I retired from Munster the following year. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was lucky enough with my innings. Like, I suppose when I look at fellas now getting injured and they're young, like, I finished playing for Munster when I was 36. So, you know, I did pretty okay out of it. Like, considering I'd been there in the amateur days and then to be offered 7 years as a professional, I was delighted to get that.
Yeah. Well, there's the famous picture of you and the two boys in the anthem against Scotland. There's always that, which
absolutely,
is showing.
Yeah, absolutely.
One last point on this. So when Mike Ford comes in, you know, because teams are just so defensively well organised now, and maybe the likes of Ford coming in around then, Eddie bringing him in is the start of the brilliant defensive organisation we so often see now. Did Ford make a huge impact for you, Mick, as a player instantly? Were you just far more defensively orientated and organised?
Absolutely, like, and in fairness, he actually made it easier for the big boys, you know what I mean, or the slower boys, because, you know, he put a system in place that's basically, if everybody stuck to it, it was going to work, you know what I mean? And particularly around the pillars and that, it was something that okay, we would always follow the ball, but we wouldn't always follow the flight of the ball. Sometimes, and Johnny Wilkinson was great at it. He was great putting the ball back in, you know what I mean? It was obviously something that came from rugby league. But in fairness to to Mike Forhey. Like, we basically, once you secure the inside and then you open out, that was something we had to get really used to, just taking the first step forward and then going across. Like, we would always have just taken the first step sideways. But it was great. I mean, it was great to see how it worked, and it's gone to a different level now at this stage. But certainly the principle was there from day one, you know.
Right. Final point, lads. Eddie, are you worried about Friday night in Cardiff? It's hard to not suspect that the Welsh lads are going to come out like a team who've had 2 weeks of being criticised in Wales are going to come out, which is going to be fairly intense.
Well, this is a game I've always worried about since once we got the fixture list for the Six Nations. I thought we'd get to this point with three wins. No, we haven't, obviously. The Scotland game we left behind us. But this is a game I always saw as the one that could make or break us. And I think if we win on Friday night, we could easily win the following Saturday and maybe leading the championship. But I am worried about Friday night because, in my experience, like, whatever about Wales on the road, they're a different team in Cardiff. You know, in that stadium, they play an extra 10 or 15% above themselves. And I think them losing to Scotland has done us no favours either. They're going to be really wired, because if they lose to us on Friday night, their season is a catastrophe. It'll have knock-on effect to the line selections. It's their last home game in Cardiff in the Six Nations. There's a lot of chips on the table for them, and that makes them very dangerous. I've been worried about this game all championship, and I'm not any less worried than I was to start this, despite everything.
Right.
So I think this one, if they could win this one, I think we could win the championship.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to earn our points in Cardiff on Friday night, whatever way they come.
Yeah, it feels that way. Last word to you, Mick, on it.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Eddie has said there, to be honest. It's a huge game, but I think, you know, I think we must have learned from the last few times we have been to Cardiff. I think we're in a good vein of form after the last match. Hopefully there won't be any injuries this week, and hopefully we'll be able to put out a strong team. And if we can do that, I think we have a good chance. But what we must remember was Wales were very good against England. They were looking not to beat them. And they will have been disappointed with the Scottish match, so there will be a backlash. Now, whether we're able to handle that backlash or not, time will tell. But look, if we're good enough, like, good teams will handle backlashes, and that's what we have to do with the weekend.
Yeah. Well, listen, we take 54 points to 10, that's for sure. And Mick, I'm just glad you're still talking to O'Sullivan, given that he dropped you so often.
Not at all. I enjoy reminding him, let's put it that way.
See you, Mick.
Thanks, lads. Cheers.
Cheers. No problem.
Cheers, boys.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.